the point of the grading, I think, should be to help management formulate their plan of how they're going to deal with these issues and which ones matter and which ones are low picking fruit. You know, it should be helpful. It shouldn't be, haha, I've got six highs on you. Well done, me. So for me, you know, if I'm saying you've got three highs, it means three really fundamental things are missing. And that's where your priority should be. Get those in place. And so it should be a helpful thing.
This is a Security Weekly production. Security Weekly is a resource of Cyber Risk Alliance.
The Cybersecurity Collaborative and WIS is proud to present CISO Stories. Each week, CISO Stories takes a deep dive on security leadership with one of the contributors to my latest book, the best-selling CISO Compass, Navigating Cybersecurity Leadership Challenges with Insights from Pioneers, as well as from other top CISOs and security thought leaders. The Cybersecurity Collaborative is a unique membership community enabling cybersecurity leaders to work together in a trusted environment. To learn more, visit securityweekly.com/CSC or visit cyberleadersunite.com. I am your host, Todd Fitzgerald, and this week we welcome Robert Finley, Global Head of IT Audit for Glambia Corporation, that is a global nutrition group dedicated to delivering better nutrition for every step of life's journey and in many of the products that we use today.
I'd actually tried many different jobs in IT. Before I got into information security, I'd started off in programming, I'd been in operations for many years, I'd worked on operational technology and information technology, project management. And I think what just occurred to me through all of these were every job I had, there was some kind of security incident. And I actually found clearing the mess more interesting than actually doing the day job. And also working out why it happened and the root cause analysis, that kind of thing. So it's almost because it's quite investigative as a role. And there's a lot of research involved. And I like doing the research around why things are happening and what the trends are. And this is one of those fields that's ever changing, isn't it? You know, this isn't the same threats as 3 years ago, never mind 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 40 years ago when I started. The technology changes. So for me, it's a really interesting field. I don't expect everybody to be interested in it, but the more I've been in IT, the more I've stayed in this area. So it's either information security, where I was a CISO, or IT audit, where I feel like it's a good place to pass on the knowledge and the experience that I've gained over the years.
Mm-hmm. So you're the head of global audit for Glambia right now, but you've also worked with British Airways. You've done some consulting with EY in the past, so you have a great breadth of experience in this space. And I'm just curious, that you've been in the audit function. Was there something in your childhood that you can track back to? There was an early interest in wanting to dive deeply into these issues.
No, because obviously when I was a child, there were no such thing as computers. We were lucky to have an abacus at school and a slide rule, Todd. So I don't know about anything in that. But I've always been in a very inquisitive family. You can't do anything in my family without people asking you why. And that's the best question, isn't it? So I think if you're going to be an auditor, if you don't like the question why, you're probably in the wrong role. So I think it comes from a background of that, of just being persistently challenged or working out, you know, what's happening? Why is it happening? It's not a childhood issue, I'm delighted to say.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. That's because I think we can all track back to things when we were younger that we did that attracted us to this field. We're talking today about, you know, working with the IT auditors. And, you know, it's like, you know, the IT auditors are here, they're here to help you. It's like the government, we're here to be your friends. So, So tell us about that, about, you know, from the perspective of auditing, you know, what's your lens on security and how do you, You know, how do you see this space?
Well, for me, it's one of the areas of utmost importance in my field. There's many things you can audit in IT audit, but security is one of the key ones. In fact, we've been tracking all our findings for about 7 years at Glanbia, and a huge number of them can boil down to logical access issues compared to anything else. Disaster recovery would probably be the second most audited area for us. And so when we contract this and we track it all against COVID, so we've actually got some nice grading against different topics. And it turns out that it's of great importance to the business as well. Because if you don't have security, you don't really have any faith or trust in the systems. And then you're gone. You know, there's too many big mistakes can be made if you don't have faith in those systems. People won't trust you online. It underlines the business, you know. So for me, going in and auditing that's actually providing a bit of a value to the business overall, not just the people I'm auditing, the security managers or the IT guys, but also the guys on the board. They don't know what's going on in the detail. So that's my role, is to go in there and provide them with that assurance that just, you know, the best to our best efforts, we won't be hacked, or there won't be a fraud, or ransomware won't be installed. So I think it's actually almost an essential part of doing business now that you have IT auditors looking at these systems. And I tell you, Todd, it actually always surprises me when I come across companies that don't have any IT audit, or have never done it before, or have one guy trying to cover the vast gamut of all technologies, because I think it's an underinvested area. I mean, obviously, I would say that being the head of IT audit. So it's a really key area of my job. And without that, and probably resilience and the disaster recovery, I don't think you've got much of a system.
How do you decide, you know, what are those key areas that you should be auditing?
You know, there's a bit of experience in it, because I probably made every mess up in the book when I had a real job, Todd. So there's a bit of experience. We do a lot of research. You know, what's the things actually bringing companies down? This is maybe just my personal bugbear about risk management, but very little of it do I see based on what really has happened. And I've looked at a lot of this, and when I say something like what's really brought down, what's caused a security breach? A ton of it is you just didn't lock down admin. And yet, very little emphasis is put on that by risk managers or the guys in the business. So that would be one of the key things I would do, is every audit, whatever the system is, let me pull apart the components and go, who's got admin on this? And if that doesn't lead to a finding, I am stunned. Everywhere I've ever worked in my whole life, that is a finding on every system, almost guaranteed. And yet it's probably the best way to stop 80% of hacks is to lock down admin and change the default. Mm-hmm. So there you are. That's my little personal rant on that, Todd. So that's how I do it. I do it based on research, past experience, and I'll use some of the frameworks as well, you know, for putting around this. But it often comes back to what really causes a problem. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of research out there to tell you.
So you know, when you have these auditors come in and they come up with findings, how do you decide what's that low, medium, high risk finding?
Yeah, that's an eternal debate, and I'd say every single report we go back over this. So in my mind, a high finding is a fundamental absence of the control. So if it matters enough that I bother testing it, if it's fundamentally not there, we're probably looking at something of high priority. If it's there and it's really not working effectively at all, it's probably a medium. And if there's some nitty-gritty little bitty thing missing from the documentation about it, we're probably looking at a low. But for me, this has been a mistake that I'd start with myself when I was younger. I'd make a lot, and I see a lot of auditors making, is that they make a big deal of something that just isn't a big deal, and a bit too much point scoring. So when I first started an audit, I was in British Airways, and we did a lot of that really, and it didn't actually add any value. The point of the grading, I think, should be to help management formulate their plan of how they're going to deal with these issues and which ones matter and which ones are low picking fruit. You know, it should be helpful. It shouldn't be, haha, I've got six highs on you. Well done, me. So for me, you know, if I'm saying you've got three highs, it means three really fundamental things are missing. And that's where your priority should be. Get those in place. And so it should be a helpful thing. And that, I'd say that takes time and trust working at an organization. It's one of the benefits of staying with the same organization for a while, I find, is that you can build up that relationship with people and they know they're not point scoring. If you've set it to high, there's a reason for that. And they know there's a good reason for it. And then you can start working together on putting things right, which is actually the whole point of the thing, in my opinion.
The article this podcast is based upon can be viewed in the best-selling cybersecurity leadership book, CISO Compass, Navigating Cybersecurity Leadership Challenges with Insights from Pioneers.
I worked for a large healthcare organization, and for about 3 years, there was this, we had a bunch of audit issues. And so they asked me to be this liaison between all the external audits, the internal audits, and the security department. And of course, my job really was helping protect the company, but also to make the audits go smoother so that that the auditors were getting the right information. And so when the external auditors would come in the door, we would hand them a CD with all of the documents they asked for in advance. So that doesn't happen in a lot of audits that happen. People are scrambling around at the last minute trying to you know, get this document, get that document. And so we would take those audit the initial request document and put a CD together with all that information. So it was all very organized. I saw all the documents that went back and forth, and it's a lot of times very clear to see where these errors come from and how you get to those findings. But other times you're arguing between the high risk and the medium risk, and sometimes it seems like it's very difficult to have that conversation. So how does the CISO, you know, make that a better relationship, you know, with the auditor to, you know, because obviously the CISO doesn't want the high risk findings because it's a judgment on their performance in a way.
Yes. And, you know, you'll probably always have that argument to some extent. Again, you know, there is an element of trust and delivery. And I think you've almost, you know, there's quite a lot of body language in it as well. I've seen people come in as auditors and be very confrontational in every aspect of their approach. But if you're there just sitting down working with them and going, you know, I didn't just invent this. This is actually, should we agree the facts first? You know, let's start with the facts. Do we agree the facts? Now then, how much does it matter in this scenario? What's your mitigating control? So I think what you're trying to do is trying to get to a proper, mature conversation. So that by the time you're coming to, I think this is a high, you actually both mutually understand the whole scenario. And then you're far more liable to go, yes, that fundamental control is missing, or actually, I agree with you now, that probably is only a medium because you do have these mitigating controls around it. But it's the more you can have a discussion about it, because sometimes on the other side, I've been on the other side, and I was a shocking auditee, Todd, and you're just sitting there, arms folded, going, no, I'm not going to give you anything unless you ask for it. And you don't tend to get very good responses either, do you, from the auditor? So You've got to make it so that it is an open discussion and mutually agree. I mean, there's always going to be an argument about whether it's a high or medium, and it's got to be the auditor's opinion at the end of the day. But I think you can get a long way down the path if you start by saying, let's mutually work together on this review, establish the facts of the matter, what's really going on, and then take it from there. So that's probably how I operate generally. I try to do it in a very collaborative manner. The guys I work with now, they know how I operate, and it's everything's signaled in advance. I never released a finding before I've discussed it with the people on the ground as well. That's another thing to avoid hugely, is make sure the guys are completely happy with the facts. They can put their own spin on it if they like, but the upshot is I won't be telling their boss anything until they absolutely know about it first.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those things that you would say kind of rise to the, you know, materiality or, you know, large issue, high issue type findings in organization that CISOs, you know, if you were to give them like a list right now and say, these are things you absolutely need to have in place, or you're going to get some high findings out of that. What would some of those things be?
That's interesting. Actually, one place I worked, I was at the cooperative group, a big organization in the UK, and they were sick of getting highs. So they said to me, we want a crib sheet. What would get us a high? What would be a medium? What would be a low? So I did the highs. And to some extent, I leant on ISO 27001 and COBIT and going, if you're fundamentally missing one of the areas there, like you've got no DR plan or no DR solution, that's going to be a high. So I did them a little crib sheet of things related to DR, for instance. No DR solution whatsoever. You've just got one production box. You know what you're going to get? You're going to get a high for that. But if you've got the solution in place, but you've never tested it, that might be a medium, might be high, depending on the circumstances. You know, if it's public facing, it's probably high. If it's just an internal system, a medium. If you haven't got backups are a bit of a fundamental in the system. That could be a high. Things like that. So I did them a crib sheet on that. In the security space, I'd look at the main things that have brought down lots of companies. And it'd be, you haven't changed the admin account, you never patch, you don't change the versions, you don't upgrade, so it's unsupportable. The fundamentals like that. If you're, say, patching, but I found a few that weren't, you're not going to get a high for that. So I've actually even found it valuable to have a crib sheet and go to people, this is how I do it. It's not finger in the air. I look at the basic fields of security and I say, right, if you're not actually doing the fundamentals here, you're going to be at risk of a high risk. If you're doing them but not great, that's probably medium. And if you're doing them really pretty well, but I've done the usual audit nitty gritty, looking at the detail, and I found some, you know, you haven't signed off on your plan or something, that's probably going to be a low, and we're not going to get very excited about that. So I'd say in terms of security in particular, admin, patching, versions, hardening, often forgotten, the world of hardening a system, putting in best practice. I now see that a lot in cloud systems, Todd, across many companies, is they give it to the cloud provider and they think, that's us done. That's magnificent. It's lovely and secure. And you're going, actually, there's a ton of configuration you lads have still got to do around this. And you haven't done any of it. So that's how cloud systems are being pulled apart by the moment, aren't they? By gangs and stuff. So stuff like that, access management, this is a perennial favorite, is people seem to stay on systems forever, even when they've left the organization. I see that a lot. So these would be my fundamentals. And you'd think we'd get past that by now, but my whole career, these have been pretty much the basics.
So what becomes acceptable? Because I remember being in a meeting once and they had reviewed our segregation of duties across 100,000 account changes over this period. And the external auditor had found 3 errors out of that. And they had gone after the whole, they didn't do a sample. They literally reviewed all 100,000 entries to see where they'd find a problem. And they wrote us up with a finding because of 3. And I said, you know, we should be getting an award, award to the team for this for 3 out of 100,000. I think that's pretty good. So how do you decide what rises to that, you know?
Yeah, to me, that sounds extraordinarily petty, doesn't it? You see something like that, and that's happened to me many times as well. You find something and you go, do you know what? I did the whole lot. I found the 3 out of 100,000. I'm going to tell you about them, but it's not going to see the report because it's of no interest to anyone. Yeah, anybody can get three wrong out of 100,000. So I think that's to become a judgment call. And the more mature auditor will make that call. But I have seen, I was once working for a company as a consultant, and we did a project and we did 20,000 changes, fundamental changes to their systems, 20,000. We analyzed them all. We secured them beyond belief. And the auditor came in, and one of the big four, and they found we'd got six of them wrong out of 19,876. Because I remember the figure to this day, got six wrong, Todd. And three of those were arguable. So they wrote that up as a medium. And I was going, what, six out of 19,000 is a medium? Imagine if it would have been 1,000. Do you have something beyond high for a really bad mess up? I just couldn't believe it. And neither could the CIO at the time either. He went absolutely mad and he threw them out, basically, because it was just disproportionate. And that, this is what it comes down to, maturity in audit. A good auditor will be mature about this. If you're not scoring points, you would let the three in 100,000 go, wouldn't you? But you would tell you'd say, you know, I found these three, you probably want to put them right, and you probably would. Would you raise it in a report? I don't think so.
One of my favorite jobs, I was the global CISO for Grant Thornton International at one point. And, you know, we were the number fifth global, didn't quite make the big five. We were the big five audit firm at that time. And it's very interesting internally when you're asking all the audit partners to beef up their security, to secure the systems when they're the ones out auditing everybody else. So that was a lot of fun. I just kind of had a little smile on my face for that.
We had a similar situation at EY, actually, Todd. I did find it funny, some of the advice we'd give people. And I'd turn around to the partner and go, are we following this ourselves at all?
Yeah.
We give advice, Bob. I was told we don't take it.
So what sort of, you know, we have these things like the ISO certifications and the SOC 2 reports and things like that. If I'm looking at other companies to get some sort of assurance without going in and doing a full audit on them, what sort of things should I be, you know, putting some degree of reliance on that their security is good because all supply chain is affecting us all today?
Yeah, no, that is a perennial problem for me because the bottom line is ultimately you only trust yourself or your own team to really have done it properly. So you're taking on trust somebody else has done it. So I like to actually look at who did the SOC 2 report, for instance. Now, I do like SOC 2 reports because they can be really detailed. And I can learn just from experience that if they've missed something out, I'll be able to spot what they've missed out. And then I'd send them a set of questions about those things. So I think those are really good reports, but they're a starting point for me. They're not a sign-off issue. And the same with ISO 27001. I've seen a lot of those, and quite often they're not scoped for the area that we're using. So they'll say, yeah, we've got ISO 27001, but it'll be for a completely different system or a different part of their organization, or it's scoped to just part of what I'm interested in. So that's when I ask the questions. Now, the problem is, of course, big organizations can just tell you to go and get lost, can't they? You know, so what I then do is I normally present this to the auditee, in a way, the system owner, whoever commissioned the system, and say, well, if I was doing this audit, here are the areas that I could have audited and provide you insurance on, and you have no assurance over those areas. Here's the ones where they've got a SOC 2 report, you've got moderate assurance over that, and here's things I can check, because I can look at the website or whatever it might be, and I can check it for myself. And I said, that's just a little heat map, and I think that's part of the product, is by going to whichever provider it is, here's what's changed in your assurance map, if you like. And that's the way I found to approach it. They have different qualities, some of these things. ISO 27001, I find people nickel and dime it a bit and, you know, really cut the scope to exactly what suits them. Whereas the SOC 2 I found more useful, just in my experience. Other people might have different experiences on this. And those are the main ones that I found. But also, I tend to like to see some kind of specialist has done it rather than perhaps some trainee from the big five, as we might call them now. that I know you worked at Grant Thornton. Mm-hmm. So that's how I do it. So I've done those sort of assurance maps before, just to show them how they change by their decision to deploy somebody else in the supply chain, if you like. What's actually changed in terms of our risk profile?
So does it help to put in the right to audit clauses into your supplier contracts?
Definitely. That's a check we do on every contract with every supplier. Have we got right to audit? Now, the funny thing is, Todd, is the vast majority of our suppliers are really very obliging and they've got nothing to hide. So they'll let us audit anyway, even if that clause isn't in. But it's an often forgotten clause. And you know what? Majority of them, you don't ever deploy it. You don't audit every single supplier. It's only certain key ones. But it's a really good habit to get into because it'll tell you something about their openness and their attitude to what they're doing. If somebody refuses point blank and they're not massive like Amazon, you'd be asking yourself, well, why don't you want me to have, I don't know, 2 days is normal in this sort of thing, 2 days to come and check your security center or whatever it might be? Why wouldn't you want me to do that? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a very normal thing to have in a contract. It's something we try to put in every single contract of every supplier. And I think it's really useful.
So what about things like, a company does an internal pen test and mm-hmm. I'm asking to see the results of that. You know, where's the line as far as, you know, what they're willing to provide me? You know, what's providing, you know, a view into their vulnerabilities that they have on their systems?
You know, it's really interesting. I've had almost no problem getting hold of those reports if they've done them. And it might just be my personal experience. Maybe it's the area we work in Ireland. But I've actually had very little problem getting them. And I've wondered, you know, why is that? And maybe, you know, and some of them, they're quite glowing. So you're going, well, no wonder you told me about this, because in fact, you've done very well out of it. Very rarely you get a bad one. But maybe they just want to start with an element of trust. Some people have that business sense that, you know, we want to be a trusted partner. So here it is, warts and all. This is what the pen test did. But this is what we're doing about it. So I've always seen whenever we've had a partner like this who's done the test and they've given me the results, they've got an answer for what's happened. So it could be a good way of doing business. But, you know, in the past, going back quite a few years, I did have people who refused to do it. And they often turned out to be not the best partners, interestingly.
Mm. Yeah, that's good perspective. Well, you know, Robert, this has been wonderful talking about, you know, this topic. I think it's something, you know, that every CISO is going to have to work with auditors and develop that partnership to strengthen their own security programs. What final advice would you give to emerging CISOs, current CISOs, experienced CISOs as they're going forward on this journey?
I would say make your IT auditor your partner here, because they're your eyes and ears. You almost certainly don't have bottomless pit of resource. So these guys can go out and actually find out what's going on for you. So if you start working together and you don't get too worked up about the fact that they might grade the reports or the individual issues, you've actually got an extra workforce and resource working on your behalf. I've had some great CISOs over the years who I've worked with. And it's a super relationship. It's a two-way street, because often they can. I let them come and have a look at my plan and say, what would you suggest I go and look at? So in fact, they get to get me go and look at things that they don't have the resource to go and check. So this becomes a mutual success if you work together. If you're at loggerheads, you're just going to be in a world of pain. You're going to spend too much time arguing and not getting the job done. So I'd say try and get to a partnership status. Of course, you're going to be in opposing camps on certain things, and a good, robust argument is an excellent thing to have. But I think you can gain far more than you'll lose by doing the audits.
I think that's a wonderful perspective. Thanks so much for what you do and for taking the time to share your knowledge today with our listeners.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
WIS is on a mission to help every organization rapidly identify and remove critical risks in their cloud environments. Purpose-built for the cloud, WIS delivers full-stack visibility, accurate risk prioritization, and enhanced business agility. WIS connects in minutes using an agentless approach that scans both platform configurations and inside every workload. We perform a deep assessment that goes beyond what standalone CSPM and CWPP tools offer to find the toxic combination of flaws that represent real risk. To learn more about WIS, please visit securityweekly.com/WIS.